plenty, or I decided to go and make plenty of them instead of just a handful, because it seems like when I make a handful, we need them. So we'll go ahead and get it there. We live in trying times. How many know that? And we find all of us, every last one of us here, I guarantee you, there's something that happens in your life that would actually make you want just to crawl under a rock. Amen? Every last one of us. You know, I think sometimes people think, well, I wish I had their hand. I wish I had it as easy as they had it, because they never seem to have any problems. I guarantee you there's not a person in here that does not have a problem. And I can guarantee you that there's nobody in here that can say, well, you know what? Things just seem to be as easy can be. Because I guarantee you that there's some way, somehow in your life, there's going to be something, a way that the enemy attacks. And what I have discovered in this last day, and this is spiritual discernment, is spiritual discernment, but it's scripturally based. And when I say spiritual discernment, I'm going to put it in modern vernacular. Spiritual discernment is that used to, it seemed like, and he still does it, the devil just made mass attacks. Massive. Just whoosh. But you know, we've become so, because of TV and media and all this, he still does mass attacks over in the underdeveloped countries. And here there's still mass attacks, maybe with the weather or something. But what I have discovered, what Satan does, is with us, especially because it's his last day, he's brought out his special forces. And the special forces does something different than just this massive attack. When you watch how the military does its work, the way the military does its work, and I really didn't figure it out until it blew my mind. I was watching, how many remember watching Desert Storm? And CNN, the reporters were talking, and the Scud missiles were coming over their head, and you see them busting, and the Patriot missiles were going up, and you watched the jets going down, and as the jets were going through Baghdad, you saw the smart missiles going and hitting certain targets. And I was just blown away. About the missiles, yeah. I was just blown away because I said, these smart missiles are going in. And I kind of thought it was like these guys had a joystick. But that's not what was going on, because I had some friends of mine, a pastor friend of mine, a preacher friend of mine, one of the pastors who's a preacher, that he was in the Green Beret. And he was a Green Beret trainer. But at the time of Desert Storm, he wasn't training. He was over there. And he said, nowadays they do have joysticks. They got all kinds of ways now because they got satellites locking in, going down, and they got their joysticks and all this stuff. But this was not, even though it was advanced warfare, it's nothing like today. But still, he said, you remember seeing them smart missiles, them smart bombs being launched from the jets, and you thought they were just awesome, how those guys, those pilots were just zeroing them in right exactly where they needed to be. I said, yeah, weren't that awesome? He said, no, it weren't. He said, 6 months before we ever attacked. Would you listen carefully, because I'm getting somewhere with this. 6 months before we ever attacked, the Green Beret were sent in. The Green Beret learned their language. They grew beards. They went in, they looked like they were Arabic. They grew beards. They grew long hair. They wore the stuff. And these Green Beret, for 6 months, walked around and learned where the real targets were at, and learned where the fake targets were at, and were on the ground, and were finding out where Saddam Hussein had put some blocks up to make you think something was there. And so these guys, for 6 months, blended in and just communicated. Then, when there was time to attack, when the missiles started coming in, when the jets started coming in, the Green Beret were on the ground with, well, I call it a painter, but they had a laser that couldn't be seen by the normal eye, and they actually held them on the targets, And when they held him on the target, the smart bomb sensed that, and the smart bomb went down to wherever they had it painted. So anything that got hit was a strategic target. Not only was it a strategic target, it had been painted. It had been prepared for the hit. And so it's prepared for the hit. When the hit takes place, we're going, wow, we're over here thinking, man, this is just some awesome stuff, not realizing that not only did the Green Beret do that, but then you had the Rangers. The Rangers would come in on the beach, and they would do the initial go at it. Then the Army came in and occupied. So you got the Green Beret going in ahead of time, occupying the land, learning the language, learning the hot spots, learning the cold spots. Then the Rangers come in, and they hit it hard, and then the Army comes in and occupies. There's three stages. Now, the same way, and then after it's all over with and they pulled it all out, you know, the man told me several times they had Saddam Hussein in their sights, but they were not allowed to fire because Bush made a promise. We weren't there to kill him. We were just there to put him back out of Kuwait. So if he'd have killed him, he said it would cause unrest and it would just be too much collateral damage, so to speak, so he wouldn't do it. And so, again, and Saddam Hussein had doubles. And so as people go shoot at them thinking they're shooting Saddam Hussein, they're shooting his doubles. So all this stuff's going, this is heavy duty. Some people don't even know about all this stuff. And when I started learning this stuff, it was like, blew me away. Okay, in this last day, Satan wants to get a foothold. A foothold. And because he wants to get a foothold, the whole problem is, if he plans on getting a foothold, then here's where the problem lies. If he wants to get a foothold, then he is going to have to really jump in and establish something more than just jumping and I'm trying to get this to listen to me, and it's not doing it. I know y'all have never had your computer do that, have you? Okay, hold on here. But the Bible tells us, you know, that Satan, like a roaring lion, walketh about whom he may devour. Well, when you talk about him walking around, he walks around like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. It actually is talking about how the devil, like a lion, once he starts tracking his enemy, the lion will actually follow its victim for days, weeks, even months. It will follow around. It will go for weeks without eating. And it watches the flock. While it's watching the flock, here's why it's watching the flock. It's watching the flock in order to find a weak one, or to find an old one, or to find a sick one. And he'll watch until they get by themselves. And when they get by themselves, where they don't have the rest of the flock to defend it, it'll take them down. I was watching one of those channels the other day, and as I was watching it, it really kind of blew me away, because anybody's ever heard of, write this down, give no place. I'm trying to think of the name of the Komodo dragon. Anybody ever heard of a Komodo dragon? Well, a Komodo dragon was after an ox. You know what he did? The Komodo dragon actually watched this oxen, which was really much bigger than it was, waited till it got to a water hole where its attention was divided while it was drinking water. And while it was drinking water, what happened was it bit it on the ankle. It tried to kick it away, but it bit it on the ankle. And then it backed up and followed the ox for over a month. The ox did not know that when he was bitten by that Komodo dragon, that it had a deadly poison. And the ox just knew it was getting weaker and weaker and weaker. Plus, that wound kept bleeding. Before long, not only was one Komodo dragon following him, there was about 10 Komodo dragons following that ox. And after about a month, When the ox could barely move, they jumped on him and they literally ate him alive. Tore him apart alive. So, with all that in mind, again, the Bible tells us to give no place to the devil. It didn't say, watch out for him taking a place. It says, you give no place to the devil, or place for him to have a foothold. That word give means you're in control. Wow. We want to blame everybody else, but you're in control. Give no place to the devil. Because he's walking around seeking whom he may devour, just like those Komodo dragons. He injected that poison, and then they just followed him around for a month. And when he got so weak that he could not defend himself, they took him down. That's what Satan does to us. Okay, that's what this is about tonight. Satan, with his strategic warfare, he's sending his green beret. He's watching. He's trying to figure out what makes us tick. He finds out our push buttons, our buttons. You know how our children know where our buttons are at? My children know where every button's at. When they want something, they know how to push the good button. When they want to aggravate me, they know how to push the bad button. When they want to see Super Dad come out, they know how to push it. When they want to see Werewolf Dad come out, they know how to push it. You know, the same way, Satan goes around, he's trying to find our buttons, and then instead of sending out a whole army after us, he sends a sniper. One. He doesn't try to take out everybody. He tries to take out one. Because if he can take out one, it's called the spiritual domino effect. If he can take out one, pretty soon that one is going to help take out another, and then another, and another. And you can watch, and that whole group goes down and doesn't know what's happened. Because Satan, in his spiritual warfare, has gone in and hit one, and then it goes to another and another and another. Like the Komodo dragon, he spreads the poison and follows and waits till you get so weak from fighting this thing on your own that then he comes in and devours you. So here we go. Let's talk about this. It says right here, criticism. Kritikos. It means able to discern or skilled in judging. And of course, criticism has two meanings. I left this up here from last week. Speaking fairly with discernment, y'all have to say discernment. Discernment in regard to merit or value. A literary critic is expected to give a fair critique by accurately analyzing, judging, or reporting. In other words, you can judge a tree by what? The fruit it wears. Now, that word judge there means discernment. If that tree is given apples, it is not an orange tree. If it's given peaches, it is not an apple tree. You can go to that peach tree all you want to, and you can prophesy to it. You can pray to God. You can curse it, and you're still not going to get an apple off that peach tree. Okay? Now, the second one, speaking unfairly with trivial or harsh judgments, a person with a critical spirit gives unfair criticism by fault-finding, nitpicking, and quibbling, and passes unfair personal judgment. Personal, when I say personal, now you are now calling, you're calling the verdict. You're deciding. Okay? And all this with Bethany. There's some stuff that was going down with some people that were taking advantage of her. And honestly, to be totally honest with you, I'd like to go grab a couple of them, grab them just like this, and bang their heads together. But you know what? The Lord taught me years ago. I had a couple of guys hurt me beyond hurt. I'm talking about to the point where I didn't care if I never picked up the Bible again. And I was preaching. They hurt me that bad. And the Lord told me, if you'll take your hands off of it, I can do more in a split second than you can do in a lifetime. And when I started seeing, So I backed off. I backed off. Even when I had a chance to retaliate, I'm not kidding. I had the stuff in my hand to retaliate. Lord said, get rid of it, put it down. This is not what I've called you to do. Put it down. And so I put it down. Because I had the truth. They had lies. I had the truth. And there it was. And the Lord said, put it down. I said, but it's the truth, Lord. He said, put it down. What happened was I watched. And in a couple of years, I saw some of the worst stuff happen to those people. So bad that I felt bad for them. I even cried over them and prayed for them. Because when I saw God unleash, because they falsely judged. And so when they falsely judged or just criticized, I saw what happened to them that wasn't falsely judged and wasn't a criticism. It really happened. The stuff they were criticizing me about hit them so hard that it was taking the breath out of them. I mean, there was all kinds of stuff going on. There was litigations, there was law, there was the funeral home. You wouldn't believe the stuff that was going on. And I found myself going to the funeral home and visiting, going to places and offering my condolences and could I help? When I saw that stuff unleashed, I'm saying it was all because of me. No, I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is they had this spirit about them, which I'm going to be talking about in the next few Sundays. They had a spirit of criticism about them. And if they didn't understand or didn't like what they heard, then they would criticize. But they wouldn't criticize to themselves. They would criticize out loud and they would criticize everybody and actually would try to pull sides, which is wrong. Okay? And so what happened was I sat back and I watched. And the number one ringleader, bless his heart, he's with God now. The span of watching it take place, it was probably 2 or 3 years. But when the calamity started, I couldn't believe what I was seeing because everything they were hard on everybody else about, come back on them. It's kind of like if I said whatever I would criticize you about or say about you, it came back on them. And we're going to talk about this, but it didn't. And I should have waited till I got down here. But what happened was it didn't just come back to them. The measure they meted out came back and then some. And it was so bad and so horrible that I couldn't believe what I was seeing. And they apologized. They saw what was going on and apologized. But you know what? They may have apologized, but still the stuff was going on. And I was so, I was so taken back and hurt. It hurt me more to see them hurt than to see them hurt me. You know what I'm saying? It was just bad. It was bad. And I won't go into it. I really don't because I don't want to spread it. But I'm just telling you, some of the stuff that happened to them, I honestly would have never in a million years thought it would have happened to a person. But what they did was with the measure they meted out, they got it back and then some, and it was so terrible. I just wouldn't leave it alone. That's right. So what I did was since then, when somebody that happens, you know what I do? When God says back up, guess what I do? I back up. You know why? Because like I was telling Linda says, some of these people took advantage of Bethany, and it's just terrible. And I said, well, you know what? And I told her about this story, and that's why I'm bringing it up now. I said, what the Lord showed me was if you leave it alone, he'll take care of it. Because during the time these guys were going through these calamities, I was being blessed upon blessing, upon blessing, upon blessing. And the only thing that could stop my blessing would be my attitude. And as long as I kept my good attitude and said, Lord, you bless them too. In the middle of these troubles, you bless them too. And I just kept on reaching forth and keeping a good attitude. And so I kept growing. I mean, kept growing. It was amazing. Bam, bam, bam. You could see all the works of God. It was just amazing. But at the same time, when I heard about them, you know, and I was going, God, I don't even comprehend what I'm seeing. So what I've learned is, I've learned, like I told Linda, I said, Linda, there's some people out there that done Bethany wrong and got her in trouble, took advantage of her because she's so loving and wanting to reach out to people. I said, Linda, if we leave it alone, God will take care of it. We just need to watch out for Bethany and teach her again. We've been teaching her ever since since she was that tall, you know, but she's as hard-headed as they come. So Linda said, you know, sometimes that's seems kind of hard and unfair, doesn't it? I said, yeah, it seems hard, and yes, it's unfair. But again, I've discovered, and this is what this is all about right here. And it's amazing how we already started doing this before Bethany got in trouble. We were already doing this. You know what I'm saying? So it's not something I pulled out because Bethany got in trouble. We were already doing it. But it just helps because, again, you give no place for the devil. Don't give him a stronghold. Don't give him a place to put his foot. You know, it's like when I'm trying to pull against something, I put my foot up. You put your foot up for leverage. That's what it's saying. Don't give him a place to get leverage so he can get you even harder. You leave it alone. Let God handle it. So watch this. The Bible stresses the important impact of our right and wrong words. The tongue has the power of life and death. Proverbs 18:21. What is God's heart on a critical spirit? I'm glad y'all asked. Throughout the long book of Job, watch this. I wrote it down here so you'll have it, so you can use this as your own ammunition to help somebody else. Throughout the long book of Job, God is mostly silent, speaking only at the beginning and at the end. How many in here have you gone through something really bad and you're not hearing God at all? Wow. I've had it happen. When those guys attacked me, I you know, because I'd done nothing but good for them. I'd been over backwards for them. I had done everything I could to help them, to be their friends, to love them. And then, bam! And I said, I cannot believe what I'm seeing. It's happened twice since I've become a Christian. Yeah, I'm telling you, God. That's right. That's right. Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. See, the difference is we don't know exactly where to hit and how long to hit and where to actually be effective. And sometimes we might go after the wrong person. God doesn't. God knows exactly what to do and how to handle it. So it's a win-win all the way around. Okay. I'm gonna get a little further down on this. But he doesn't miss a single word of conversation between Job and his three friends. He seems silent, but he's there. I can tell you tonight, if you feel like God's not there, he is. I'm going to talk about it. Matter of fact, let me get to read the next line and I'm going to tell you something. Never consider it just because God is silent that he is absent. Okay? He speaks up and reveals his heart response to the critical spirit. And that is, the one who loves a pure heart and who speaks with grace will have the king for a friend. Or people in charge or those that are high over will appreciate what they're hearing, and good stuff will happen. You know, there's two kinds of presence of God. The Bible tells us in Psalm 139, if we ascend into heaven, God's there. If we make our bed in hell, he's there. And you say, wait a minute, the Bible says hell is the absence of God. Well, not necessarily the absence of God. You just don't feel him. Okay? Because God's everywhere. Also, that could be speaking to us right now. Sometimes we make our bed. I told this to Bethany when I went and talked to her after I got out of jail. Or after she got out of jail. I told her, she said, I just feel like God's not with me. And I said, God's with you. Because it says even if I make my bed in hell, you're still there. And you made your bed in hell. Meaning you did it your own way, at your own pace, under your own power, under your own way. but he's still there. See, there's two kinds of presence of God. Even though it's one presence of God, there's two ways it's acknowledged, okay? You want to write this down. There's two ways you acknowledge the presence of God. The first way to acknowledge the presence of God is his known presence. His known presence. His known presence is physically sensed. You ever felt goosebumps? You know what I'm saying? Or you feel that just that warmth in your heart? You know, or you just feel, oh, God, I just feel it. You know, that's the known presence of God. That's number one, is physically sensed. Then there is the unknown presence of God, which is only is sensed by our faith alone, not by our feelings. So there's times when we're going through things, we don't necessarily see God's hand, but when you can't see his hand, you can still trust his heart. So you've got the known presence of God, there's a physical sense. You've got the unknown presence of God, which is sensed by your faith. And so there's times whether I feel him or not, he's here. He said that. Whether I feel him or not, he's here. Because I'm not walking. If we get walking by feelings, then there's a lot of problems happen. You have to walk by faith. Like with those people that did Bethany wrong. I'm not walking by feelings, because if I walk by feelings, I'm going to hurt somebody. I'm walking by faith. Exactly. So I'm walking by faith, which means I'm staying out of it. I'm letting God handle it. Okay? God can do a whole lot better job than I can. And not only that, but when God gets through, he always does redemptive work. So when God takes care of it, his work's always to bring somebody closer to him. So not only is he going to take care of Bethany, he's going to take care of them, and he's going to take care of the problem, and everything he does is going to be of a redemptive nature. He's going to try to pull Bethany and pull these other people back into him. And I was talking to the Lord the other day, and I said, Lord, when she was 5 years old, we dedicated her to you. We gave her to you, Lord. We put her in your hands. And I was walking, and all of a sudden the Lord spoke to me and said, and I've never let go of her. He said, she's let me slip out of her hands. He said, but I've never let go of her. And then he said, trust me. Trust me. So again, I can let my feelings get all in there, and I can go into courthouse and wind up making more trouble than ever. I can go up there and get around her friends and wind up get my own self arrested for you know, whatever, you know, or I can just keep quiet and let God handle it. And the two times that this happened in since I've been a Christian, both times the Lord said, let me handle it. And every time he handled it, I saw redemption on both sides of the fence, but I also saw some tough stuff, because when people were being critical, it came back to them. And so I said, God, help me not to be critical. So here we go. Jesus came to earth clothed in humanity in order to die for us. So if he weren't a man, he couldn't die for us. God can't die. He was 100. I've heard people say he's 50-50, 50% man, 50% God. No, he was 100% God, or he couldn't pay the penalty. He was 100% man, or he couldn't die. So he's 100-100. All right. He came to show us the Father. All right. He came to show us the Father, and in human flesh. In John chapter 14, verse 7, he said, I'm the way, the truth, and life. No man comes to the Father but by me. If you had known me, you should have known my Father also, and henceforth you know him and have seen him. And Philip said to him, Lord, show us the Father, it suffices us. And Jesus said to him, have I been with you so long, with you a time, and yet thou hast not known me, Philip? Thou hast not seen me. He that seen me has seen the Father. And they'll say, show us the Father. And it's like DC said, Daddy, what? Explain that to me. And I said, okay. I said, how often do you go downtown or go somewhere? And they say, you got to be David Linton's son. He says, it happens all the time. I said, well, why do they think you're my son? He says, because they always tell me, when I see you, I've seen your Father. And DC said, yeah, Dad. I said, okay. Jesus said, when you've seen me, you've seen the Father. Because the Father is a spirit. He's spiritually discerned, but Jesus Christ was human, so he could show us. He was spit on. He was beat. He was our prime example. Think of the stuff that happened to him. And he kept his mouth shut. because he knew that the Father had his back and the Father had it covered. And he knew that redemption was going to come. If he'd opened his mouth, thousands of angels would have come down. But then redemption, we'd have been lost. Okay? So now, he did that both by his actions and his words. He also, if we want to know the Father's heart on the subject of a critical spirit, we only need to examine the life of Jesus or the way he behaved towards people and what he said to them. He confronted sin in people's lives, but he did it with compassion, not with a critical or condemning spirit. He did it as the Father did it then, and he still does it now. So now watch this. When you're interacting with others, the Lord wants us to examine our own conduct and our own motives. Again, we have a tendency, every last one of us, because we don't know, even if you think you're a mind reader, there's no mind readers in here. So because there's no mind readers in here, we judge people by their actions. Always. But we judge ourselves by our intentions. So our action may be worse than their action, but because we think we know what we're doing, and we know why we were doing it, then we've got the intention. Well, I meant good. But the other person said, well, I was meant to do good too. But no. You can't tell me you meant to do good because it hurt me. So again, we judge people by their actions, and we judge ourselves by our intention. And so Jesus knows that. So Jesus spoke these unforgettable words with an unforgettable imagery. Now, get me to read this. I'm going to go through it quickly. And as you stop me, I'm going through it quick. Do not judge, or you too will be judged. For in the same way you judge others, you will be judged. Now this is some powerful stuff here. Matter of fact, this is so powerful. That word judge means to actually pass sentence, to be summoned to trial, to be examined and have judgment passed upon the person. All right? So this is some heavy duty stuff. Do not judge or you will be judged. For in the same way you judge others, pass judgment, call them to you, and you decide the verdict, what you'll be judged, and with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? One of the translations I read one time says, why do you want to talk about the toothpick in your brother's eye while you got a telephone pole in your own eye? Wow. Jesus knew how to give it out there, right? And I was even preaching one Sunday, and I went and got the flagpole. It was here. I got the flagpole and held it up like this. And I was saying, I'm looking at your toothpick. I get somebody a toothpick, and I was swinging that big old flagstaff going back and forth and said, I got a telephone pole in my eye, and I'm talking about your toothpick. And people were ducking, and they were scared I was going to hit them. And the whole problem was, I said, here's the problem is you don't realize you got that telephone pole. All you can see is that toothpick. So here it goes. So why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eye, when all the time there's a plank in your own eye? You're trying to take care of them, and you're not even taking care of yourself. You hypocrite. I don't want God calling me a hypocrite. Out of all people, I don't want God calling me a hypocrite. First take the plank out of your own eye, then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. So here it is. Here's the little points here from this. This could be a sermon. And a matter of fact, I may preach it some Sunday. But those people here on Sunday aren't hearing this. So when we do it, y'all just act like y'all heard it for the first time. Number one, don't be judgmental. You too will be judged. Wow. Do not judge, or you too will be judged. I'm going to talk about that in just a second. Number two, let's be judgmental. Now, that's actually talking about an attitude, a judgmental attitude. You can tell just as good when you're around somebody with a judgmental attitude. I mean, everything's wrong. They're the only one that's right. Everybody else is wrong. I got a cousin like that. And when his mama died, it was terrible because when his mama died, I went to try to do if anybody's ever had me do a funeral for you, I'll go in there and get some words and some stuff, try to get a eulogy, talk about the person so we can have a legitimate, good funeral for the person that speaks about the person. He had been in the military and was gone for 20 years, but he's been back home for 20 years. His mother just died a little while back. And so I sat down with him. And I said, I want y'all to tell me something about your mother. He says, well, I weren't around here for 20 years. I have no idea. Dude, that was 40 years ago. You've been here for the last 20 years. And then when he starts talking, everybody, whenever he talks about any subject, he's the only one that's got any sense. And so when I hear him talk, I'm thinking, well, you know what? I know what's happening. Just as soon as I walk away, he's going to tell me that stupid preacher cousin of mine. So I'm just careful how I even talk to him. I just talk real light with him because, I he's got the judgmental spirit. It's hard to be around him because nothing's right. Everything's wrong. Nobody does anything right. Bam, 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 bam. And so I understand he was a Vietnam vet, and I understand he may have some PTSD issues, and that's the only thing to me that's his saving grace in my eyes is he got some PTSD issues, okay, because he pulled several tours in Vietnam. All right. But don't judge others or you'll be judged in the same way, measured by the same standard. If you are harsh on other people when you judge what they've done, then others are going to judge you harshly. And the most of all is God's going to judge you harshly. Oh, that's terrible. You see, remember now, there's a difference. There's the judging by the fruit. That's discernment. There's a difference. If I'm judging you to discern, you know, watch this. You just hit me. Don't anybody try it, but just, you know, I remember watching The Coward of the County with Kenny Rogers, and he was the preacher, and he got one of the guys just trying to get him turned the other cheek. He said, hit me. And the guy said, I don't want to hit you, Pastor. He says, I want you to hit me. He said, I don't want to hit you, Pastor. He said, hit me. He knocked him off his feet. I don't think he meant that hard. But if one of y'all hit me and it hurt, then it's okay for me to discern. Did they mean to? Did they mean to? Should I have ducked? You know, it's like when Greg Sabbath got in my car Sunday after I fed him that barbecue. He got in my car and he about took me out with his elbow. But I know that he didn't do it on purpose. I know that he just was getting in the car and he kind of a little big fella. He's short, but he's big. You know, he's stocky. And he put that elbow and about took me out. Now, if I thought he was meant to, I'd say, Greg, please get out of the car and stand there and smile. And while he smiles, I'd crank up the car and leave. But I know he didn't mean to, okay? So I'm judging the fruit, to judge the tree by the fruit it bears. I'm discerning. Okay, my discernment is to understand the situation. God wants us to discern every situation we're in so we understand the situation to know whether how we should handle it from there. Greg did not mean to almost take me out with his elbow. He just got in the car at the same time I was getting in the car. He fell in, and when he fell in, he did like this. As I'm getting in, and I'm tall, and I got to get my head down, and so, I mean, he about took me, okay? And so, again, we're to discern, to understand what is happening. Also, if he had meant to hit me, or somebody's meaning to hurt me, then and I discern that person is trying to hurt me, then I know that it's better for at least the time being, I leave that person alone or handle it in a different way or something different because now I've discerned they meant it and they meant to hurt me versus they meant to help me and thought they were helping. So again, that's understanding. So I know how to respond in the proper way. And to respond in the proper way, again, involves letting God handle all this. Then there's judgment. That is actually to decide the proper verdict. The only problem is, I don't know his heart. If he'd have hit me, I would not have known his heart, even if I thought he meant to. I don't know his heart. I don't know whether he was really trying to help me, if he was really trying to do something. I've had people, I remember early on, because I don't do that anymore, but early on, somebody had hurt my feelings, and it'd be a while before I could find my way getting over it. And there was somebody that really hurt me bad. This was not like these other guys. This was just a guy hurting me, and I didn't talk to him for a year or two. And then I found out, number one, he didn't realize he had hurt me. Number two, when he realized he had hurt me, he said, well, brother, I weren't trying to hurt you. I was actually trying to help. And so then when I realized that, I said, wow, all this time. Yeah. So again, we are to discern, to understand the situation, but God is to decide the proper verdict. Because if he really meant to hurt me, God will take care of it. And God knows how to take care of it, will it actually work. Okay, number three, don't focus on small faults of others before focusing on your own big faults. He said, why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? Again, telephone pole versus toothpick. I many a time have seen people walk around with the telephone pole while they're trying to pick toothpicks out of people's eyes. I've got some people in my family that are bad about that. And then I'll go, but have you looked in the mirror lately? And they go, why? And I say, there's a telephone pole there. And they go, where? And I show them the telephone pole and they go, oh, I didn't see that. Wow. Thank you. Okay. So now, number four, don't talk to others about their faults while you ignore your own faults. How can you say to your brother, let me speak the speck out of your eye, let me help you fix your problem? Well, all the time, you're not worried about fixing the one, your own eye. You know, it's kind of like this. I don't need to be on your porch sweeping the trash from in front of your door until I've gone to my house and swept the trash out in front of my door. It's very important. See, this is how we fight a critical spirit. Is everything we think of as critical, is it all fall in this spot? Not necessarily as tough as it is, but I'm giving you the toughest. You can back off to whatever mirrors you want to back off, but I'm giving you the toughest right here. Then, don't be hypocritical. Correct your faults. Then you can correct someone else's faults. You hypocrite, first take the plank out of your own eye, then you will clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. What I have discovered is I have more problem with the guy that brushes my teeth every morning than anybody I know. I have more problems with the guys that wear these shoes I'm wearing. Anybody know? Because this guy here will think he knows something. I'm bad about this, and Linda gets on me all the time. I admit I'm bad about this. Linda will start talking, and because she's not ADHD, and because I am, she'll start talking. I'll finish her sentence. And she'll go, I weren't even going there. Or the other night, she said, and you know what we're going to have to watch out for? And I said, yeah, blah, 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 blah. And she said, what are you talking about? And I was talking about one subject. She was talking about another. She said, if you could just slow down your little ADHD, ever-ready bunny self and listen, you'll understand a whole lot better. And so now I catch myself. She starts talking and I go. Because she's talking in that Virginian drawl. And I'm listening. Matter of fact, I remember when I went to work at Fountain, the head of engineering, the vice president of engineering, the guy that hired me, was from Connecticut. And he thought somebody could talk fast. He think I can talk fast. Woo! That guy could run circles around me. And he was talking in his Connecticut Yankee, Connecticut drawl. And he kept talking. I was writing stuff down. He says, you think you can handle that? And you think you can do this? And blah, 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 blah. And I said, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and let him know what he's hiring. I went, excuse me, sir. He said, can I help you? I'm at a job interview. He says, can I help you? I says, yes, I got a slight problem. He said, with what? I said, with you. And now, we're at a job interview. He says, can you tell me what you're talking about? And I said, yeah, you're talking northern and I'm listening southern. I said, so if you don't mind, slow down a little bit. He said, oh, that's the problem. Okay. And then he slowed down. You know, I had one of the same guys working on my computer at Best Buy, one of the geeks the other day, and he called me up when he had my computer, and he went, "Mr. Linton," I said, "Anyway, blah, 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 blah." And I said, "Whoa there, Jackson, slow down." He goes, "Okay, here's the problem with your computer." Blah, 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 blah. And I said, "The Bible says you have to have an interpreter when you speak in tongues." And he said, "What?" I said, "You're speaking so fast, you sound like you're speaking in tongues. Slow down. You're costing me money. You need to tell me what's going on." And finally, after the fourth time me telling him to slow down, he calmed down into regular speed where I could understand him. I said, "I talk fast, but you just blew me out of the water." Okay. So now, always, whenever, what I've learned is, and this is hard to do, what I've learned is, when I find a problem with somebody, and we all find problems with people, don't we? Matter of fact, some people find problems so much you think they get paid for it. When I find problems in an area or problems with people or problems with a family or problems anywhere, the first thing I do is I stop and I say, "Lord, help me understand intention." Because intention has a big part to play in this thing. And then, "Lord, help me to look over myself and make sure I'm doing right, because my biggest problem might not be the problem with them. It's that I'm looking at them through my problem." You know what I'm saying? So here, Luke said it like Jesus, very similar words. It says, "Do not judge, and you will not be judged. Do not condemn, and you will not be condemned. Forgive, and you'll be forgiven." There was this. I'm closing with a story, unless you got any questions. And here's the story. Up in New York, there was a preacher that used to ride the train every day, the subway, to get to his church. And there was a gang that rode the same subway. I mean, a bad, bad gang. And one day, they knew he was a preacher. They attacked him on a Sunday. They attacked him, took all the church money, took everything. They beat him till he almost died. He was in the hospital for quite some time. They caught these guys. They had them on trial. This is a true story. He had a little bitty old storefront church. It wasn't growing. It was just barely existing. These guys were on trial. And one by one, they were being sentenced to a lot of years in prison for what they'd done to this pastor. And the pastor, the judge says, "If you got anything you want to say?" And he says, "Yes, sir, judge. I know this is quite different." He said, "But I've been praying for these guys." And he said, "I would like to make a request." And the judge says, "What's your request, pastor?" He says, "Release them and let me pull their time." And the judge says, "That's impossible. It will never happen. I'm not going to release them and let you pull their time." So when he sentenced them, put them in jail, this preacher went and talked to these guys every week in jail. They got saved. Not only did they get saved, his church began to grow. It exploded with growth. And you know where the people came from that it exploded with growth from? The family members of the guys in prison. They filled up the church. And then when the guys got out, they came to church. I have seen it where there's been people that honestly did things and said things with a critical spirit that honestly I wouldn't do it. Even when I was in the world, I wouldn't have done it. And I still had to minister to them. And I had like my dad or I had my mother-in-law or somebody go, "You're still going to reach out to those people?" And I said, "Yeah, Jesus would." And you know what happened? Some of those people became some of my dearest, closest friends. Same thing in my family, my dearest, closest friends, because I chose and take the high road and let God handle it. And when God handled it, I was there to pray for him. I didn't go there, or sick him, God. I just said, Lord, it's in your hands. And that's what I'm doing with these people of Bethany. Lord, they're in your hands. And if they call me in to minister to them, I will. So, any questions? Comments? Got a question about this? And this is not an all in all day how to handle everything, but this right here, Job wound up praying for his friends. And when he prayed for his friends, that's when God, after it was all over with, God came to Job and said, you need to, you know, look at these guys. I know they've done you wrong, but Job prayed for them. And when Job prayed for them, Job got double for his trouble. I've been telling people lately that's been caught themselves in some bad fixes. I tell them, you're on the verge of something great because the snipers are after you. And Satan ain't coming after you if you're not a hard target. He ain't coming after you. If you're a soft target, he ain't coming after you. He's trying to get people to make a difference. And if you can make a difference, you're going to be attacked in more than one way. But remember, refuse to retaliate with people, because the Bible says we're not fighting flesh and blood. We're fighting Satan. Your hand was raised, weren't it? Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, literally the Greek means to meet or measure and then return it back. So it's reaping what you sow. Oh, yeah. That's right. That's right. You always, when you plant one seed, I can plant one corn, and we all can eat corn off of that one corn seed. Thousands. I remember talking about it not long ago, that little seed, and that one little apple seed was thousands of apples. Matter of fact, thousands of trees. Yeah. Again, I'm having to practice what I preach, because I do want to go take care of those folks that took advantage of Bethany. Because I kept telling Bethany, you know better. Don't do this. Don't do this. And it's just like DC and Daniel. They said, they told me the same thing when I told them when they were younger, leave these people alone. They would go, but Dad, we watch you take people like that all the time and help them. And I said, son, that's because I'm equipped to help them. And there's some people I know I can't help, and I just try to stay clear of. But most people I try to help, it's because I've been trained and I'm mature. You're not mature. Bethany weren't mature. She's just not mature. She couldn't handle it. And so she even told me, I'm here to help this girl. And this girl got her locked up. That's right. Yes. No, you've got to be trained. You've got to be equipped. You can even get killed messing with these people. And so you got to be careful with this stuff. And so and it's the people that are worse than that person, because that people's pushing that person And some of them will do things just to get themselves out of trouble. Yeah, you're right. You're exactly right. And so you have to be led by God. I was riding down the road one day on third shift, and somebody was hitchhiking. And this is back when I used to pick hitchhikers up. Now I only pick them up only when God says pick them up. And usually it's turn around and go pick them up because I'm still going, uh-uh. But this one guy stopped and picked up, and he walked into me and he said, he gets in the car and he's high. He's high on something. And he goes, you're a blue eye. He says, and I'm a red eye. And I'm saying, and I said, well, where does red eye go? Please tell me. And he says, about a couple miles up the road. I said, make sure I don't pass it. And he's talking about, I knew, you know, and nowadays I would handle it different. But that's back early in the ministry when I had limited, and I still have limited training, but not like it was back then. And so, you know, he kept talking about, you're a blue eye, you're a blue eye. And I'm thinking, my eyes are hazel. Well, what you do is, in a situation like that, is you find somebody who can help them, and turn them to somebody that can help them, because there's been people that I could not help. They were beyond. See, it's one thing I learned in counseling. I'm a pastoral, right? Well, I'm a pastoral counselor. Then in that situation, you pray for it. You pray for them, and God will send somebody. But that's right. When you pray for them, you put them in the hands of the Lord. But see, now I'm a pastoral counselor. I'm not a professional licensed counselor. I'm a certified pastoral counselor. It's a different thing. There's different levels of pastoral counselors, different levels of professional counselors. You got those that just have a BS. You have those that have an MS. You got those that have a PhD. And there's some that have an MD, which can actually give you medicine. So what you do is you got to know when it's over your head. And I do it all the time. I say, look, I can't help you. You know, we got to do something different. You're beyond me. We're going somewhere else with this. And I'll send them somewhere. Or I'll take them to the hospital. Say, you need help at the hospital. You know, and we've done it here. Since I've been here, there's been several on occasion that I actually got them to the hospital. You know, because of the bad situation. So again, you got to understand when you got your limits. And so don't think, well, I've hit my limit now, God's going to be disappointed in me. No, he won't be disappointed in you. He knows your limits. When you meet your limit, just back off. Back off. Oh, yeah. You don't have to turn your back. Mm-hmm. Right. Yes. Oh, yeah. Right, because you got. Well, that's where we have to be careful not to get a credit.